Robert J. Reed at 545 Randolph Street. Mr. Reed moved here in 1915. My name is Durham, Francis Durham, and I'm the interviewer. Mr. Reed grew up in another part of the country and then moved to Northville. Where did you grow up, Mr. Reed?
I grew up here. I was born in Detroit.
Born in Detroit.
Okay. I moved here approximately on my second birthday. I was taken from my original parents because I was ill at the time, a baby, and my grandparents, Mrs. Biffle, who lived in North Dakota, took me home to nurse me back to health. Well, when I got well, they never took me home to my parents. I never lived with my parents. I was raised by my grandparents.
Let's stop it, Prince. Okay, we're back on the tape now. We checked it and found out it's okay. And Mr. Reed was telling me while I was talking with him after checking the tape that he's not exactly sure where the family lived when he came here. You want to tell me some more about that, Mr. Reed?
Well, yes, I could have lived in one of three different houses, and I'm not sure at that moment which one it was. I remember a house at the back of where the old library building used to be uptown. And then from there, I remember a brick house on Main Street called the old Bowdie House. And one historical event happened there. I can remember it did happen there, but I had a very common disease that was going around at that time. A sickness was called the smallpox.
Mm.
And apparently I survived it, and ever since then, they tell me I've been immune to it. Then there was a Pinham House, they called it, a wooden structure that's across from the Bowdie House where the Dick Builder business is today.
Right.
Well, then from there, the best I remember, we went over across the old mill pond, a street that went up from the old mill pond, and had a lived in a frame house across from Dr. Cavell's, veterinarian at the time. In fact, I started the school, Northville School, in kindergarten, and walked to school with young Ted Cavell. We were the same age, approximately. He was born a month earlier, and the two of us out of the school together from there. The school we went to was the old grade school building with the back of the old high school building, which later used burned, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and one of the striking features of that area where we lived was that the Yorkers had a grist mill right there, the old mill farm.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in those days had chicken coops. Most people had a chicken coop, some had a cow. And my grandfather, one of the things I used to enjoy is going to my grandfather, Mr. Bissell, and he would buy corn from the farmer and on the cob, and then he would take it over to Yorkers and have it ground in the chicken coop. And it always smells so good, something about it. And the man that worked there was always covered with the dust of the stuff. A very interesting fellow was Mr. Goodall. Well, this is Northville name is quite well known by old Taylor, I'm sure. He had a son, we used to call him Oak because his dad worked in the business, you know. And but later we moved from there over on Grace Avenue where I really grew up, over on 464 Grace Avenue, which now is a one-story building. When I was there, it was a two-story. It might not be my house. That's where I spent most of my boyhood.
Okay, now I'm going to back up for just a minute because you said that when you came here, you were ill.
Yeah.
And you were raised by whom now?
Oh, a grandmother, Mrs. Biffle. That's my father's mother.
Okay. So you were actually raised by your grandmother.
Oh, yeah. I'm probably raised, you might say, after my second birthday by my grandparents.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Biffle, who was a, my grandmother's second husband, actually, was the father that I knew as a youngster.
Did you continue to live with them?
I lived with them, and my grandmother lived with me until she died right here in this house. But my grandfather, Mr. Thistle, that was my stepfather, grandfather, your father, he died quite young. He died at 62 years of age. I'm trying to think of the year. I was only 13 when he died. And from then on, I was brought up entirely by my grandmother, who was very victorious in her outlook and teaching and all the things that today we don't hear much about. She taught me. In other words, there would be no smoking, no drinking, no lying, no, and punishment was severe if you were caught at it. In other words, you know, she brought me up very strict. You was an old, I used to call her a tyrant, but really I appreciated it.
I don't think you suffered for it. So.
No, I appreciated it today. And, yes, I remember one time I came home from school, and the story was that I'd been in a scuffle. Well, she didn't know it was a Mr. Riley, so I was in a scuffle, but he wasn't Riley. My grandmother wanted to know if I won the fight. I said, well, I don't know. I think they probably could award a death the better of it. Well, I said, go in the other room, man. And she promptly gave me the riches. I said, what for? She said, when you get in a fight, there's only one way to go. Win. if you lose, I'll beat your car. That was my grandmother's principle. You know, she said, pay your debt, keep your word, you know, I will allow a thief in my home, but not a liar. I can watch a thief, but I can't watch a liar. A thief is taboo. A liar is taboo, too. And this became an interesting to me. She also had a feel that she should get acquire all the land that she could possibly acquire. She thought land was the sign of wealth. That was the principle. Well, I did my best. I got over it. I can say what I got to the point where I could. I did have acquired now some 81 acres of land, which I don't use. But I have all land like Grandma told me to do.
Right, by her principle.
Yeah. So that's the... That's that part of it. No.
What did your grandfather do for a living?
Oh, he was the loss and damage department of the Pier Marquette. He started out, he was a CPA by trade. He started out as I understand it, a telegraph operator in Grand Junction, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And then went to Grand Rapids, and the story I have been told that he was alderman of the city of Grand Rapids at the time he met my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And then his job transferred him to the Detroit area.
Right.
And I don't know for certain whether he ever lived in Detroit himself or not, or whether he settled in Northfield right off the bat. All I know is that he used to ride to work, you know, we used to have train service.
Out here?
Oh, yeah, the old depot down here. Grandpa used to get up every morning, go down, get on the train, and go down to work in Detroit at the Michigan Central. I think the office was in the Michigan Central Depot.
Uh-huh.
And he used to go down there every morning, and he probably used to get early morning coffee and a newspaper in the car on the way to work. And then later on, they quit the service in Northville, and then we had to drive to Plymouth and pick him up in Plymouth and so on. He did that until he became, he had a stroke. Of course, he had good work. He didn't do it for long.
How long ago was it that the, are there still any railroad tracks in this area where the train used to come?
Well, no, the tracks are still out there. With the old depot, you know, you know, the viaduct there where you go from, Northfield Chemical, you go around past the Ford factory there.
Right.
The Viaduct, you're going under the old track.
Okay, all right. And how long ago did they discontinue train service? That's gotta have been a long time ago.
Oh, yes, because at one time in Northfield, you can't do today what you could do then. I could, without the ownership of an automobile, I could do two things. I could take a train, go to Detroit, and transfer to any place in the world.
Yeah.
Or take the Interurban from Northfield, the old DUR right downtown, and I could be down to City Hall, Detroit in 45 minutes.
Okay, so
But you didn't need a car, and we didn't know, well, listen, hell, we didn't need anything.
So besides train service, there was also an Interurban that came out here.
Detroit, and that was excellent. That was, that was very fast. It made two stops only. Mm-hmm. When it swung on the Woodard Avenue, it went right down the Woodard, boom, right downtown. And it was very nice.
Sounds like some of the transportation then is better than what we've got today.
Well, in my opinion, it was. It was. Yeah. We've become so dependent on the automobile. I should crab about that. I made my living off the automobile. But the fact of the fact, for the average citizen, especially some of these older people today, who are not as good at getting around maybe at the age that I am, but I could see what a great advantage it'd be if they could just get downtown here and just pick up an Interurban and go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
See, and then from there you could transfer to all the other facilities and stands out worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. is an interesting man. Another Northfield name was a Mr. Westfall. There'd be a lot of Northfield old you could remember. I think his name was Trey, I forget anyway, his first name. And Mr. Westfall was a motorman on Interurban. And I remember him very well. He lived right there off the Dunlap. Church Street, that's what it is. Anyway, we had two sons, I believe, and a daughter. I think some of the sons may still be living. I don't know about the daughter. I haven't kept much track of them. But anyway, they were high school kids with me. But this is, what I'm trying to point out is this was a Northfield operator. Everybody here knew everybody and what they did. And, that's how they.
So it was a small town everybody knew everybody.
The only thing that we had one police officer, we used to call him Cracky Light. He had a bad leg. He didn't need a stupid leg actually for the job he had. There was never any robberies, murders, or anything of that nature. Maybe he had to get run down a stray dog once in a while, or maybe some old fellow was a little tipsy and had to be escorted home, but for the most part, his life was quite peaceful. I remember he used to sit in the front steps of what used to be the Laughlin home, which used to be the city hall, and that was just there on Laughlin and Son.
Uh-huh.
Typical small town operation. Wonderful. that's the way Northfield was. When I was a kid, everybody knew. I doubt if there was anybody hardly in town, you'd be a stranger with the nose immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the old John Scipio, who used the only colored man in the area. He had a hunchback. He had an old wagon and a horse. He lived out on just outside of town, trying to think the exact location, right approximately across what was known as Cass Bank Park. Curve on the road there, and there's a great big tree there, and they had a little old house there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was known there in Northville, old John was known. He'd come through Charlie's wagon, pick up junk.
Uh-huh.
He made his living off of that.
Yeah.
And John Scipio, he'd come up and down the street with his wagon, and everybody belonged to him.
I bet he was an interesting character, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the kids all like him, I mean. Oh, I could go on and on about, you mentioned about my boyhood.
I wanted to talk to you about that. Did you have brothers or sisters?
Yes. I had eight.
Okay. How many of them are still alive?
Six, besides myself. Two dead. The two youngest died. One was killed outside of Ann Arbor, and the youngest, Bill Morgan, the boy, youngest boy, and sister, youngest sister, died in California. The rest of them were still.
Okay. Of the eight, how many were raised by your grandmother and grandfather?
None.
Okay.
I'm the only one.
Okay, it's because you were ill that they took.
Well, I had what I guess it was, they said pneumonia or something.
Yeah.
But I did not know my brothers and sisters all that well because I didn't live with them, and they were almost like some friend or somebody we visited. Even my father, I saw him there. They eventually followed Mrs. Bissell to Northville.
Okay.
So and they lived down the street from her.
Okay.
On Grace, at the end of Grace Avenue, and my father worked for old Carl Erie.
Okay.
And he had something with picturesque to do. Of course, he shoveled coal, but in the wintertime, talk about a picturesque thing, he drove a bobsled. And he had a team of horses and a bobsled and delivered coal from a bobsled.
And that today is the oil company, the Ely
the
oil company.
The same people, yeah. Of course, old Carl is no longer around.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they had the ice. We got our ice from them. We had the old ice box, you know. That was my job as a kid, to put the ice in the ice box. I never enjoyed it. You always got your fingers pinched or something. I had to lift it up into the ice, the old-fashioned ice box. And also, I had the job of watching that the pan underneath didn't overflow.
Yeah.
And the ice, as I understand it, was in the ice house over here. I wish I could think of the name of that street that runs back of Arbor Grove. It goes down from Arbor Grove down the hill. It goes by the extension on the manufacturer's bank there.
Yeah.
Right along in there, Evie's had the ice house.
Where'd they get the ice from?
Mill pond. They sawed it
on
the ice and then they packed it in straw.
Yeah.
All summer, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, it's interesting that some of those old businesses, or at least offshoots of those businesses, still exist in Northville today.
Now, what I hated to see leave was the Schrader people.
Okay, the furniture.
Oh, yeah. Schrader was an orphan institution, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did he start off in the furniture business or something else?
He was an undertaker.
Oh, he's a funeral director.
He's an undertaker, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, his house stands is still in good condition. It's right across from the school, or right across from the community building.
Yeah.
It's still standing. It's a nice one.
Okay, then from becoming a funeral director or mortician, then he went into the furniture business later, or is that another branch?
Yeah,
of the family?
I think it's a... No, that was a little fuzzy just when he did that to me. But I know the Schraders in Plymouth are the same family.
Okay. Same
I
family.
Think they still have a Plymouth.
Okay.
I don't know that, but they did that. Yeah, then Nelson, the son, was played right next to me on the football team. He was a big man. And he and I played together. And at the end of each season, the Schrader family gave a banquet to the football team. They spent weeks ago in the Schrader's house for a banquet at the end of the season every year. Because he was probably a pretty wealthy man, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're a nice family. And then I understand that Nelson's son was the last operator of the Schrader business here, I think, before it. An offshoot from him is the Castellan
funeral.
Yeah, now that's a Northville family also, the Castellanes. The son took it over, and the father before him was, the only director before the present. Now it's a third generation, I believe.
Still the Castellanes.
Yeah, I think it's a third generation Castellanes. I think it is, yeah.
Okay. It's interesting how some of these old families have stayed on and from generation to generation.
I could tell a story about old Ray Castellan that nobody would think it was real off coal, and that was you know, being there were people of considerable means, and they had fine cars and stuff, and I used to ride with them once in a while, because Fred Kathleen, the boy, and I were model airplane buddies, by the way.
Right.
And I'd sit in the back seat and roll on summer day, and he had the windows open on the side of the car, and old Ray, he chewed tobacco. And then he spit out the window in the front, and it come around in the back, and I noticed in back of me the beautiful headlining, and that car was plastered with tobacco way in the back of my head. And it always, as a kid, the question, here's a fine car. The man didn't give a damn about it.
With tobacco juice.
Maybe a better strike.
No, that's interesting. But, let's talk about your schooling. What kind of, where'd you go to school? I guess they call it grade school.
My whole school career was here in Knoxville.
Okay.
My first teacher in kindergarten, I remember, was Mrs. Hammond. Miss Hammond. She belonged to the Hammond family, and we had a famous, rather well-known Northfield athlete in the years called Lefty Hammond. And she was my first teacher. I had many teachers. Please won't talk about my school record, because Mr. Hammond would be the one to ask that. Of course, he's now gone, but he was a fine man, by the way. And
Mr. Hammerman, incidentally, ended up as superintendent in this district. Did he start off as a teacher in the district?
He was principal.
He was the principal. Okay. And then didn't he end up as a superintendent?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
But Mr. Hammerman had one unique thing about him. See, I was one of the rascals, one of the young, you know how young fellows are. And we knew, we had all had our opinions and our of this and that, and I also knew the opinions of the other rowdies and the kids in school, and even the most rowdy, the most rascally youngsters, all respected Russell Hammond. They never disliked him. He was stern and strict with them, but they always had a feeling that they were on, he's a fair man, and they can't very well get mad at him. He had a great characteristic that way. He was an excellent teacher, excellent man for administration of schools.
Good.
And saved the school money, too, by the way. Instead of hiring secretaries and assistants and aides, he used the students and gave them experience in education and secretarial work and doing things in the office. And rather than hiring outsiders to do it, he used the student body who were taking commercial courses to start with, you see?
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, yeah. He was, I think he's... There's no doubt about the town has shown its respect for Russell Hammond, as a whole in this piece. And there was another legend, Ida Cook.
And that would be the Cook School?
Yeah. Well, Ida was a famous teacher for many years, an old teacher here. And I remember being a brilliant student like I was, I had to go back an extra year to graduate. I had a couple subjects, one of them English. I took a commercial course, like typing and shorthand, of something to do, and I was walking down the hall one day, and the football coach that I had came back to school for a visit, and he saw me walking down the hall, and he says, "Are you still here?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "You and I to cook." I always remember that statement. His name was Ruggles. Harold Ruggles. But, yeah, school days in Northville, once again, was great fun. Just so much fun, I didn't want to graduate.
Now, you mentioned you were in football in high school. Were you in other sports also?
Track.
Yeah.
I tried one game of baseball. I picked pitched against Wall Lake, and I switched over to track. And I spent the race, you know, it was a quarter miler, and then but football was my big love. I played, I only made the varsity 2 years, the last 2 years, because I was not very big. I was only 155 pounder, and it took me, my freshman and the sophomore year, I was just not big enough. I made it in my junior and senior year, I played on the first team, but I love football. We were in a bad way. We had poor equipment, and some of it was built from other schools, and we had a very poor field. It was down here in the middle of where the racetrack, you know, right in the middle of the track. That was the football field. It was full of thistles and no bleachers, no nothing. You know, in them days when we went to football game, people stood along the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we used to try to hide a camp out, or what we call a camp out, or one of the ends after the kickoffs. One of our men drift over and almost mingle with the crowd so they wouldn't see him, you know, stuff like that. And, we played all comers. We played Detroit schools. Anybody want to play? We played Plymouth. We played Redford, Dearborn, Wayne, Farmington. Farmington was one of our... We always played Farmington. We always played Plymouth. And,
was there such a thing as a conference or a league like there are in high schools today?
I think they call
today?
It a suburban league, but
suburban
it was
league.
Pretty
okay.
wide suburban.
Okay, it covered a large area.
I never played games. First, I played against a school called Detroit Country Day.
Oh, yeah. Still exists.
Is it? Someplace, I think that was a school that first encountered a fiber helmet. Never seen one before. I found out, remember, they hurt you when they hit your leg.
Yeah.
And in later years, I remember Fritz Kreisler, when he was head of the Big Ten, campaigning to have the fiber helmet outlawed from football and return to the leather helmet. It would cause more injuries than it did good.
Mm-hmm.
That was his opinion, I believe. And I think he was right. But anyway, the fiber helmet is cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the secret to that, isn't it?
Now, the high school that you attended, Northville High, is it on the same location as the present high school or a different location?
No, it's the old school, what they call the old village school.
The old village school.
What they call it.
So that was...
That was a high school.
That was a high school. Now, where was the elementary school located? The grade
school? Well, they had had a fire, and it had burned, you know. And they got some barracks-like things that looked like army barracks out in the back where the high school stands today, where the parking lot is.
Yeah.
And they used those. They looked just like army barracks.
They're like Quonset huts?
Yeah, well,
temporary wooden structure.
It looked like a, not an awful lot different than an army barracks.
Yeah.
But they said they were one story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my memory called me, that was the grade schools until they got in later years, the WPA, was it?
Oh, yeah, Works Project Administration.
They built this school, grade school that they had right straight next to the old school here.
That was a WPA project.
Yeah, I know my son started his first day in school in that school.
Yeah.
But I think that schools in those days were much, in a lot of ways, much the way I would like to have them today. In other words, I could have stayed in the fifth grade till I was 35 years old. It didn't matter. If I didn't pass the examinations at the end of this year, I come back next year to the fifth grade, and I could be doing this. In fact, we had one man, he was a bit of a Northville character, that finally had to leave school. He stayed in fifth or sixth grade just too long. You know, he did get beyond it. But what I mean is, that was their policy.
Yeah.
You passed or you didn't proceed.
Yeah, okay.
And discipline was there. We didn't like it as kids, but I like it now. I look back without it. I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah.
See? And, Mrs. Larkins used to sit up on the top of the dais there in the old assembly hall on the street there and look over us like an old, the Queen of Sheba, boy. And if you got out of line, she could overlook the whole room. And they did have rubber hoses in her desk.
Now, this was in high school?
Oh, yeah.
Or this was high school.
High school
that
too,
would be
yeah.
something like what they used to call study halls.
Yeah, it's called Assembly Hall.
Assembly Hall, yeah.
You'd have your individual classes, and then you'd come back there to study hall. But the study hall had this one overseer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember one time, to show you what you can't do today, Mrs. Van Vliet, I didn't dislike her, but I wasn't smart. I liked a lot of kids. And we found out that if you took tea lead and wrappings off of slotted tea, she had a tremendous paper walk. And she was walking past them. They had a long line of blackboards on the wall, on the opposite wall away from the window.
Yeah.
She was walking along that aisle one day, and I don't know what possessed me, but I took a shot at her. I thought sure she wouldn't know who did it, and it missed her, but it hit the wall. It sounded like a rifle shot. And oh boy, but I sat there very innocent. I thought, well, I got away with that. She didn't know who did that. A little bit later, someone come up behind me, and I got a good solid whack behind the head.
Oh.
She says, don't you ever do that again.
Oh, she knew who
now,
did.
Can you imagine today doing something like that? But, you know, I didn't resent that.
Yeah.
I knew I was out of line.
Yeah, it had coming, so.
Well, yeah, but I thought I got away with it. I didn't. And then there was another interesting thing about that old school up here. It faced Main Street, you know.
Yeah.
And they had the pencil sharpener on the windowsill where you could stand there and sharpen pencils and look out the window. I had the biggest bunch of sharpened pencils you ever seen, because as long as you stand there sharpening your pencils, nobody bothered you, you know. And I used to watch the Stinson Aircraft Company haul their aircraft up Main Street, coming from where they built, constructed them, and the old foundry down the other end of town, take them out to Beck Road out here and assemble them and fly them out, you see. You know, Stinson Aircraft Company started here.
I did not know that. No. Stinson Aircraft started
Stinson
in the
aircraft,
North area.
That's right. And the Stinson Detroiter, a famous airplane, was never built anywhere else but here.
Hmm.
Now, they moved to Wayne eventually, and they built other models of the Stinson plane, but the Stinson Detroiter, in fact, I have photographs of it when I'm sitting out on the old field here. And I was as a kid, I loved aircraft. And after school, I'd scoot down to the foundry stand and hang in the windows and watch them build. I love the smell of dope and the construction. That's where I got all wound up in this stuff. And but one thing is, stand with that pencil sharpener and watch the trailer trucks go by hauling that. Those airplanes, see, they had the body of the fuselage, with the wings fastened along the side of it.
Right.
Take it out there and they put them together, and then they fly them to a customer.
And where was the foundry located?
Well, it was the old, I didn't sure whether it was the old furnace foundry or whether it was the churn. How can I tell you? See, there used to be a viaduct go across there, but the interurban views.
Yeah.
And it was just the other side of that. There used to be a hollow there. What kind of, let's see, Katy Street comes down there and it kind of winds around and blends out into Northville, Plymouth Road, or Main Street, or whatever you want to call it. Well, it was right in that area where it was, on that other side of it.
It was close enough so that you could see it by looking out the window then.
Oh, no, not the factory.
The foundry?
No.
Oh, you were looking at him.
As they hauled him by the school.
Okay.
No, it's after school, I beat it down to the factory and looked in the window, not just me, young Mr. Vredenberg, who I still associate with, by the way, who's, we're married into the same family.
Mm.
He would be with me most generally, the two of us down there, Gottman, watching the airplanes being built.
Okay, now you said then they assembled them and flew them out. Where did they fly them out from? Was there an airport around here?
No, they had a field out here with a shed on it. It's Beck Road. The last owner, if he still owns it, was Mr. Charlie Lappin, the land. You go up Beck Road, or up 6 Mile. You go to Beck Road to 6 Mile, turn right, you go up about quarter of a mile or something like that. And
yeah.
You're right.
And they had a field, and then
there's gravel pits now in the back of you. Oh, yeah. It's all gravel pits now.
Yeah. So they just flew them out of this field then.
Yeah, they flew them to apparently to their customers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you used to assemble them there because you couldn't assemble them, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And I used to hang around the field all the time, and quite a colorful thing. The old Barnstormers come in there, the Jennies, take your rides on Sunday, and they, we even had a World War I fighter, a Fokker D-7, sitting there, and the Hilger family, who built the first Stinson airplane, by the way,
yeah.
who lived on Center Street, the Hilger family, they put a new engine, I remember, in that Mercedes, and I got the big joy to ride out with them and watch it done. This is a World War I German fighter plane, complete. And I understand it was confiscated by the government. Now this is, I have no facts of actual seeing this happen, but the story was that it disappeared, the government confiscated it because the man that owned it was flying booze between U.S. and Canada. During this prohibition days, you know. And the feds confiscated that aircraft. And I guess they confiscated him too. You know? But anyway, he was a nice guy. I remember the thing a kid remembers most he was, he always wore golf. But it seemed to be a thing with flyers in days of golf days,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And a cap.
Yeah. We're going to talk about your interest in aircraft later on, because that's something you're very definitely interested in.
Why, oh, yeah.
But also now in high school, you said you weren't a particularly good student, but you did have a definite interest. And did that surface in high school, your interest in art?
Yes. Oh, yes. I sketching my fellow students. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had pencil. Yeah, I always liked to draw. Just one of them things you like to do, and I just kept doing it. And like I say, until one day, a young George Harper, who was the son of George Harper, senior, says, why don't you've always been sketching, Bob. Why don't you come up and talk to my dad? See if he can, maybe he can help you. So I made an appointment. I went up to meet his father, and that changed my whole life.
Uh-huh.
It established my profession. It just did everything. And here I was walking into a, you know, almost like a private school. Private instructor. He never charged me anything. He was just a fine old gentleman that, apparently he was invalided himself, and he'd come out of the Mayberry Sanitarium. He'd worked so many hard and so many years that his health had broke. He acquired tuberculosis and he had a collapsed lung.
Hmm.
And he couldn't do a great deal. So I guess I was an enterprise. I was something that occupies time. He spent his time teaching me. And in many things, not just art, but things a young man should know, how to behave yourself and everything else. He was a father.
So he really was kind of a mentor to you.
Well, he's the, of all the people in my life, nobody could outrank him. I mean, he was my easy life, if you will. The life of an illustrator is not the hardest thing in the world. I owe it all to George Harper. I would have never gotten it. Because when I went to, but he taught me fine art.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, I met my wife, you know, and he cautioned me. It was interesting that time. The old gentleman, very sincere, he cautioned me about getting married. An artist has no time for marriage. He says, a fine artist. You don't. He says, you cannot be a decent husband. Your art demands too much.
Uh-huh.
And he says, now you got to make up your mind. So I had an opportunity to go into the illustration world, which is money-making more than fine art. And that solved my problem. You know, I applied the fine arts to the commercial aspect of it. And the commercial art, it wasn't real. It was engineering art. It was art to tell the layman or the person, first of all, who couldn't read a blueprint very well, or couldn't visualize a bunch of blueprinted parts assembled to show them what they were. In other words, I take a blueprint and draw it so you know what it is, and you looked at the pictorial. and also show you how it fastened onto the pipe. Yeah, I could show you books on what I mean, explain better than what I could.
Now, was Mr. Harper an artist by profession?
Oh, yes.
That was his full-time profession?
Oh, yes. He was very wealthy at one time. He did very well. He came out of New York. Oh yeah, he went to the Art Students League there. Oh yeah, he was a real professional. He made, I don't want to quote his salary, but the salary he told me at one time, at that time, the money he made a year was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
He had a fine home there.
Mm-hmm.
The Schrader family bought it later, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it still stands, I guess. It's a Dutch colonial. He had beautiful grounds. He brought trees from all over the world and planted them there.
Mm.
He wasn't poor. He had, his wife did a little art. They hired a woman to come in, a Mrs. Lewis from Salem, a fine old colored lady. I got to be real buddy with her. She used to come in and do work for Mrs. Harper, take care of the house. Mrs. Harper was a little social. And, last time I seen Mrs. Lewis was years later here in Northville, the drugstore. She never forgot me. I know if she's still living or not. She's a fine old colored lady.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Mr.
The Lewis family are well known, by the way. And that name around here, the residents, the Lewis family of Salem, were a well known family, a family in Salem. They were well liked by everybody. It's interesting. See, this community was so different when I was a boy. The streets, when I moved here, you know, were all dirt.
Yeah, okay.
And when they first paved, I believe the first paved road, if I remember right, was 7 miles going east. And Center Street, when it was paved, I remember there was a bonanza for us kids in our wagon. Because they kept the cars off of it till the cement set up properly.
Right.
And in the meantime, we kids had a tremendous hill to coast down through, you know, the cement. So, then gradually, of course, they modernized the streets. But it was a wonderful town to grow up in. We had our own private swimming hole, which today would be taboo. The Lawrence family, the mecca of all the young boys in the summer, was the pit. We had a name for it, which I won't mention on tape, because we wore no suits. They were not allowed.
Yeah.
There's an old gravel pit up here where Shadbrook subdivision is there. It's up here, 7 Mile Road. You go up 7 Mile, just on the outskirts of town, going west, I would say.
Yeah, okay.
And just beyond the fish hatchery.
Okay.
And we used to go back in there, and the Lawrence family let the kids use it. They didn't worry about being sued or anything like that. All every kid in town, the boys, you know, knew about the old pit as our local swimming hole. It was a nice swimming hole. It was spring water, gravel
mm-hmm.
pit.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a springboard we rigged up, no girls allowed. And we spent our summers up there. Remember, I was telling Vincent the other day about some of the more bolder high school girls apparently resented us having our own private club. Decided they'd crash it. And they came up there in a car, and they drove up, and we was all in swimming, you know. We told them to get out of there. Then they refused to budge, so we all ran out of the water, and they left. Yeah, we used to lay around there and swim, the dogs with us, the dogs to swim in with us. And Mr. Wagenberg was talking just the other day about the old pit. He said, it seemed like a dog after he dove in. Say, Wagenberg would dive in the water and the dog right after him, you know. And then when they get out of the water, the dog invariably would never just go somewhere and shake himself off. He'd go over where somebody laid their clothes.
And should, take off
see, the
on
guys
the
would take their clothes off and land on the, you know, we took our clothes, just put them in a pile on the bank. You know? And the dog would invariably go over and stand by him and shake.
Well, now, I live in Highland Lakes now, and Highland Lakes has one natural lake, and the other three lakes are all gravel pits.
Those are nice ones.
Were there a lot of gravel pits in this area?
Oh, yes. That, where you are, is the old DUR pit.
Yeah.
Where they, to help maintain the right-of-way for the DUR.
Okay, DUR is what?
The Detroit Urban Railroad.
The Interurban, okay.
Yeah, you used to go right down 8 Mile, you know.
Okay.
The track bed has only been gone so for a while. You see evidence, the old track bed, right down, right along 8 Mile, going right towards Detroit.
Okay.
On the left side of the road.
What did they do with all the gravel? What was it used for?
Road bed.
Road beds?
Yeah, you know, you had to keep up the road bed. Yeah.
Okay.
And, it was a DUR pit. And then the other pits, there was a lot of pits around there. This is Lawrence's pit, and then there's this Taft had a big pit here, you know, right up here. Now, these pits have become housing developments.
Yes, they have.
This one right over here, the great big housing development here, was Taft's gravel pit. Where I used to go out to shoot my rifle, because they made excellent backstops, you know.
Yeah.
And the gravel pit owners, they didn't care.
Yeah.
See, in them days, people didn't work. If you, I just think of today, now if that gravel pit was there today, the swimming hole, you'd have to have a fence around it, you'd have to have a guard on duty. I mean, what a life these people live. Huh? I mean, if one of our kids should have become injured or drowned, we would not sue the Lawrence family.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
They were good enough to lie.
Why, certainly. But today, the first thing what happened,
you
won yourself a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I own 80 acres, and I was saying the other day that while I sit here, if a man was walking illegally on my property, because there's no trespassing, which don't mean a thing.
Yeah.
And he stepped in a post hole and broke his leg.
Yeah.
I could find myself in a lawsuit.
Being sued. Yeah.
But he's supposed to be on
the property. On your property.
Not supposed to be on it. This is the way of life today, and this is, I think, one of the most discouraging aspects of our modern society. I think it's terrible. And everybody wants to sue somebody and won't accept the responsibility that the darn fool stepped in a hole himself, or something like that. No. And if somebody's good enough to let me use my kids to swim in their pool, I'm not going to sue them. Because the kid drowned, it's my responsibility. The kid's my responsibility.
Yeah.
And if he's up there swimming and I think it's a danger, then I should keep him from swimming there. I don't want to get into this upset over that, because that to me is probably one of the worst things that's happened to Northville.
Yeah.
Not just Northville, of course. That's the nation, isn't it?
Let's get back for a minute and talk about... We'll finish up the talk about high school and that kind of thing. I presume you played football. Did the high school also have a basketball team?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Good one.
Is it fair to say that high school that the center of activities around town was high school, for example? Did everybody go to the football game?
In
did
the
everybody go to the basketball
oh,
game?
Oh, yes, in the sports game. Yeah. The sports aspect. Although they're possibly due to the fact that a great many of the Northville people, like Grammy said, are retired farmers. They were rural people or farm people. Maybe some of them didn't have as much sport interest as like today, it seems everybody. But, and the field, they'd all go down there, and of course the big game of the year was Plymouth. And we had some great days and some very bad years, of course, like everything else. But all in all, it was a good rivalries, and the cleanest game we played all year was Plymouth, it seems. We never had any bad feeling with Plymouth.
Now, you mentioned to me also that you played in the band.
The old band created by Mr. Langfield.
Mm-hmm.
Con Langfield. Was the one. I'm not sure all he did, but the story I heard was that he literally financed and organized and got that band going. And Mr. Head was the director from Brentford. And he was an old Englishman. He's a very fine bamboo. Yet only one thing about him was very interesting. At the end of every concert, we never played the Star Spangled Banner.
Hmm.
We always played My Country 'Tis of Thee. Now, if you know your history, you see that Mr. Head was born and raised in England. You know what that tune
God
is?
God Save the Queen.
I got a kick out of that. And all of the principal marches in our book was not Cusa. Kenneth J. Alford. Now, Alford was the English Cusa.
Uh-huh.
You see? We did have the Star and Stripes forever, yes. We had a few Cusa marches, but he was pretty, most of our marches. English and one French, I remember, Garde du Corps. In fact, I still have my old man book.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting to have that.
Now,
you mentioned to me also that there was a community band, and I think that would be interesting to tell us about.
That was before, that's prior.
Yeah.
That was strictly, as I understand it, you got to remember, I was quite young now.
Right, right.
But I did know certain people that played in them. One of them was the chief of police. And the other one's the fire marshal, the chief of fire, Mr. Lanning, who was the drummer, if I remember correctly, and Mr. Stafford played a saxophone, I think. And who the other member was, it's a little fuzzy now, I think it was a Mr. Lakin, I'm not sure, but as I remember, it was all primarily, I think, Northfield businessmen formed this, had this little band. I don't even know how many pieces it was. It was a brass band.
Yeah.
And he played every Friday night. That was a shopping night in Marshall.
Uh-huh.
In Little Urchins, which, of course, I could have been one, used to scoot around and shenanigans. We used to take firecrackers and stick a piece of grocery string in the fuse, which burned very slowly, and plant them about downtown during the band concert, and they would go off in different areas, and we put them under cars or something, or somebody would have hurt, and we thought this was great. We were standing up leaning against the bank when it all happened.
It wasn't me.
But anyway, it was, to me, it was a great band to listen. I enjoyed it. It was a typical small-town brass band. How great musicians and men were, I don't know. I liked it. The kids all liked it. And it added a festive atmosphere to shopping. See, everybody come into town on Friday night for fire, for groceries, and shop.
Yeah. Now, this would include the farmers who lived in the surrounding area.
Yeah, I imagine. So. Yeah. It was shopping night, and